If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake, oh no. The forecast said that there'd be snowflakes, whoa.
And we are back at it. Wide right turn coming at you here on the Independence Network. Got Tom Kelly with me as always. And you know what, Tom? This is the second time in a week we get to do a show together, both Crosstalk Live and Wide Right Turn. Going to be airing on the same day with brand new episodes twice in one week, and it's not even my birthday. What a treat.
Yeah, that's something for me. I mean, I was thinking about something. We're going to come up on this later, but there's an old saying to talk less and say more. And yeah, it's different for me to have a week where I'm talking more.
Well, we're more than happy to have you. And you know, even on Crosstalk Live, it's been a long time coming. You were the first guest on the Independence Network when we did our launch party. And for some reason, it just took a while to weave through all the scheduling and all this other stuff. But we finally got you on Crosstalk Live. We're happy to hear you say more. And with what you just said, I'm assuming we're going to be getting into that cowboy ethics code of the West. But I'm feeling the onslaught of emails coming. Oh, be careful. You're not one of us. You're not a real cowboy from Wyoming. That is our code of ethics here. So I'm not one to tread lightly. I'm ready to jump in. But as usual, bring what you got, Tom, and I'll jump in when it's appropriate.
Oh, I am not the least bit afraid of a fifth generation Wyomingite saying I have no idea what I'm talking about. Because if that is the basis of your argument with nothing following it, that means you actually don't know what you're talking about. So you're using that crutch of geography. Yeah, I'd like to talk about that, because primary reason I ended up on Crosstalk Live is because I ran into Iverson in Bighorn, and he was laughing about the fact that the Senate president started trolling me on Facebook. And it was a really bizarre instance, and he wanted to catch my... He's like, well, come on. Give us your take on the whole thing. So that's what I was doing. But it made me think of other things too, because that was an exchange that was based on the two opposing forces in the Republican Party right now, the de facto two-party system of Wyoming. We have the Wyoming Caucus and the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. And whether somebody is actually an official member of the Freedom Caucus and has been invited to partake in it and accepted, if they vote enough with the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, they are de facto part of it anyway, per the media, per the buttons that say this number is bigger than that number. And then we have the Wyoming Caucus, who I guess is everybody else, because they, not all of them will say who they are, but that is the faction of the Republican Party that currently holds the governor's mansion, has the speakership in the House, and has the Senate presidency. So they have the leadership, not leadership of the party. The leadership of the party is clearly Freedom Caucus, but the leadership in government is the Wyoming Caucus. It's an interesting dynamic at that point. And the Wyoming Caucus can usually be, you can delineate who they are by matching their votes with, funny enough, the members of the Democratic Caucus. Because if you look at the Republicans, if you want to see if they're Freedom Caucus or Wyoming Caucus, just go to Doug Girard's Evidence-Based Wyoming and go ahead and match individual legislators against the votes in general. And you'll see the ones who line up with the Democratic Party, as we say, the purple and blue dots, tend to be the Wyoming Caucus. And the Freedom Caucus tend to be the ones who vote less often with the opposition party, which is typically how a two-party system works. But that made me think about many of the arguments that, whether I see a column from Rod Miller, or I see some article, or I hear some offhanded comments about a candidate, such as a Freedom Caucus candidate, or I see a headline about Mark Jones being, like, you know, out of state or runs for office, that type of thing. Mark Jones is not an out-of-stater. He's a Wyomingite. Yes, he moved here from another state. He's a Wyomingite. Just like when immigrants come to America and become naturalized, they are American citizens, 100%, whether they're born here or not. And you know what? I believe Mark Jones came to Wyoming legally, too. So if we're worried about that type of thing. I don't buy this argument whatsoever that you have to not only have lived your entire life in Wyoming, but your parents must, and your grandparents, and your great-grandparents, and they all have to be from having lived in Wyoming to understand how things work here. It doesn't take very long to get the lay of the land. You can't just walk into a town and suddenly run for mayor. You can't just move to a district and say, I want to be the representative at this point. I agree with those arguments to that extent. You just don't show up from somewhere and say, this place is great, but I think I know how to run it better, and then run for office. But here's the fallacy of the Wyoming caucus's argument. If that's what they were doing, coming in, carpetbagging from out of state, bringing a completely different set of principles and trying to remake Wyoming in their name, they wouldn't win office. They wouldn't win popular elections because most people in Wyoming are still people from Wyoming. There aren't enough out-of-staters at this point to vote people in at that with a radically different ideal. So what we see over and over are people moving into the state because we, you, me, Mark Jones, Jeanette Ward, we identify with the culture of Wyoming, and there is such a thing to identify with the culture of a society, and we come here because this is where we fit in. Jeanette and I did not fit in Illinois. Illinois is big government, big tax, secularism, diversity, inclusion, equity, anti-capitalism, demi-socialism, whatever you want to call it. They are anti-freedom. They were a place where you had to show your papers and prove to the government you had the right to be outside, or the privilege to leave your home during a pandemic. So we come to a place like Wyoming. Jeanette and I both came here before the pandemic, thank God, because this is the place we'd like to live. And I hear things such as like, well, you just don't understand how it is here, you know. And I hear about the cowboy code of Wyoming. And I am a former history teacher. I have a doctorate in American government. That is my PhD, American government. I have a double major in American government and urban politics. I have spent decades studying history and government and culture of the United States. Just because I've lived most of my life in Illinois doesn't mean I've spent all of my life in Illinois. And I first came west in the 1990s and fell in love with what no longer exists, the great state of Colorado, and moved to Colorado. And when other people came from California and came in and said, this place is great, I love the mountains, I love the clean air, but we need a homeless shelter, and we need to liberalize drug laws, and we need gun control and higher taxes, and remade Colorado in the name of California, well, it basically became Illinois with mountains. So I moved to Wyoming because Wyoming was now the place I wanted to go to. Now, you have to remember as I go on and on here, this is the background of the whole thing. It was difficult to go from the Chicago area with roughly 6 million people to Greeley, Colorado with about 100,000. That felt small townish to us. We were used to skyscrapers and traffic jams and daylight shootings and cops not giving a shit. And suddenly we were in small town Greeley. Wyoming, we never would have considered because the largest quote, city in Wyoming is smaller than the suburb of Chicago we lived in. Cheyenne is about half the size of the suburb we came from. After spending some time there, Colorado fell. It fell prey to the same ideology, the same tactics. When I talked to Lori Bratton, she's confirmed with me some of the same people who push these ideologies that are now being pushed in Wyoming. That's why we come with this warning that we've seen this before. And then after having spent time in small town Greeley, which is only 100,000 people, I mean, it's almost the with Evans, Colorado, it's almost twice the size of Cheyenne. We finally decided it's time for small town life. So we moved to Sheridan, Wyoming, roughly 20,000 people. And that is small town life for us. And then we get to Wyoming and we learned 5 years ago that that's city life. Because I've met my friends, you know, like Dave Holland and people in Crook County and people in Niobrara County like Jeb Hansen. And they've said things like, wow, you're from the city. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm from Chicago. No, I meant Sheridan. I'm like, city? Okay, I'm sorry. But that's when I first moved here 5 years ago. But I'm an intelligent man, despite what some of you may feel about me. And I became acclimated to the fact that, yeah, life in Sheridan, the city of Sheridan, is very different than it is on the outskirts of a place like Lusk. I get it. I understand how things work here. I understand the rancher lifestyle. I've not lived it. I understand the mindset. So this whole idea that you can't understand like the cowboy code of Wyoming unless you've been here led me to look in this a while ago, and I really had to say something about it, and we'll go by this piece by piece. It was in 2010, Wyoming Statutes, Title 8, Chapter 3, Section 8. Wyoming, in 2010, the year I decided to leave Illinois, not four generations ago, adopted the, not the cowboy code, but the code of the West, from a book called Cowboy Ethics that was written by James P. Owen, who's from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Tell me about how I don't understand Wyoming life when I live closer to Kentucky than anyone did in Wyoming.
Yeah, it's one of those funny little things I pointed out every so often. Hey, that says the Code of the West, not Code of Wyoming. And people are like, oh, well, it's in our statute. I said, well, maybe our legislators should follow it. But this isn't an organically Wyoming concept or posture at all.
And I have no issue with that because I'm not somebody who's prejudiced based on which state you're from. James P. Owen had some great ideas. I don't care if he's from Kentucky or California. If you wanted to call this the Code of the West because he was from Oregon, that's fine because these are great ideals. But I'd like to talk about those ideals tonight and how people interpret them. Why don't we go through these? There are 10 listed there, and I'd really like to go through each one. But the one I'd like to talk to about the most, thankfully, is number 10, so I don't have to come back to anything. What do you think?
Oh, I think that'll work perfectly. I'm fairly familiar with these, so I don't think it'll be too much of a problem. And I probably have a couple good examples of how this isn't necessarily applied by all your good multi-generational traditional Wyoming Republicans.
Well, dear sir, that is exactly what I had in mind. I read through these and I thought of how many people in so-called government leadership, especially after Ogden Driscoll trolled me like a teenager with a bad attitude on Facebook, that he definitely was not living by the Code of the West at that moment. The first is, number one, live each day with courage. Well, what is courage? Is courage using your position of power to try and intimidate voters into silence? Absolutely not, but I'm going to just let that go in general. To live each day with courage is a concept that is obviously not just the West. It's not just American. You could follow this back to ancient times. The idea of courage for me has always been knowing what the right thing is and doing it even if you're afraid to. Courage has never been for me to never have fear. It has been to be afraid and then still do what's necessary anyway with confidence. And I don't always see that in the legislature. When I see living with courage, doing the right thing is passing legislation and policies that abide by what the voters and the people of Wyoming want, what aligns with our principles of limited government and individual freedom and compassion and love for our neighbors. It is not courageous to slip in $800 million worth of spending into a bill because we're afraid the federal government might cut our money off. What do you think of that?
I think you're absolutely right. And there could almost be endless examples from not only the legislature, legislative leadership, or our governor. Yeah, let's jump on a state-owned private jet, go to Harvard, and claim that we have all stated we are going to be carbon negative when no one's ever talked about it. And I don't know if he thought we were never going to hear that soundbite or not, but yeah, that's not courage. That's sneaking off and running your mouth and not considering the individuals that elected you or the people you represent at that level in the legislature. But I also see it a lot within the Republican Party in a lot of these counties that either have that traditional red coat, multi-generational Wyomingite leadership or have shifted to, you know, a couple counties have been taken over by these frontier Republicans, whatever we're calling them nowadays. And you can tell by the way they run their meetings, the content of their agenda, the way that they, you know, run roughshod over their central committee from the chair, don't allow debate, don't allow amendments to the agenda, don't do the work properly, and then bring out this product that is prepackaged by them and their small group of elitists. Normally, that's the executive committee that they put together. But that's not courageous, and it's not the role of leadership at any level. The role of leadership is to conduct the meeting effectively and efficiently based on procedures and rules. Allow the people to talk. Allow them to bring up business that's important to the body that has maybe a little bad taste in your mouth, but it's the work of that body that is important, not the dictatorship from the chair. And so I see a lot of what I call cowardice. Saw it a lot in Natrona County the last couple of years, starting to see it come out of the Uinta County leadership. Saw it in Laramie County's Republican Party leadership for a lot of years, where they wouldn't even let people debate, question, or add business items to the agenda so they could discuss it at their meetings because they have no courage. They have no ability to face difficult situations, hard realities, things they may not like, but they take that title of, I'm a Republican leader, I'm a Republican chairman, so I got the meeting done and we're doing good work and that makes me courageous because, you know, no, it doesn't. It makes you a coward, not only afraid of the people who are in that body that probably elected you to that position, but you're afraid of your own inability and the reality of your own hypocrisy. So I see a lot of examples of not living each day with courage from these good multi-generational, hardcore Republican, traditional Republican Wyomingites. And I'm ready to put that one on blast anytime I see it happening. So, well, you know, hey, here's the code of the West. You following this? I don't think they are.
And what's going to come up over and over again tonight and in the future is the flashpoint of this year's primary. And that is the death of the special session to override the vetoes that Governor Gordon laid down, which he actually violated one of the other precepts of this. He laid down these vetoes in defiance of the overwhelming majority of representatives across the state representing the overwhelming majority of people in the districts. And the Wyoming caucus caucused with the Democratic Party to defeat what the people of the state wanted, and that was tax reform, and they wanted these bills that were vetoed to be overridden. It's not courage to say, well, we can't have a special session because, well, God knows what's going to happen. We just, it's going to be chaos. I mean, that's just weak leadership or that lack thereof leadership right there. But you're not living each day with courage when you say, well, what if this happens as a special session? I mean, you could say that about anything. Well, what if there's a fire and the alarms don't work? We better, you know. You can't make decisions based on anger or fear. And if you're angry, you're not acting with courage, because sometimes it's courageous to swallow your pride and do the right thing. And you're definitely not acting with courage if you're making your decisions based on, oh my God, what might happen? 90% of what we worry about never happens anyway. Well, okay, I just pulled that statistic out of my ass, but you know what I mean with that.
Yeah, it's the Wyoming caucus motto, live each day in fear, especially in an election year. But yeah, number two's definitely got some connotation I want to get into. So why don't you roll with that?
Oh, yes. take pride in your work. Pride, one of the seven deadly sins. But sometimes I think the way pride is interpreted, it is conflated with the word arrogance. Now, I am very, very familiar with the word arrogance in an almost ironic way, because I'll again bring my own personality disorder into this, because sometimes people need to understand where I'm coming from on this. A very common characteristic of autistic men, especially those of us with really high IQs, is we come across as just flippant arrogant. We just come across as thinking we're just above other people. It's the oddest paradox in how things work for us, because we simultaneously have this inferiority complex. Somebody like me and somebody like Elon Musk, we go forward in life. He goes on to become a successful billionaire, an entrepreneur. I go on to become a black belt and a doctor and professor, because we are driven by this inferiority complex. We are never good enough. We don't like ourselves. Society doesn't like us. We don't fit in. We have trouble. And so we're constantly trying to prove our worth. So while we put forth this aura of arrogance, we are actually constantly feeling inferior. I understand that completely. And I know how I come across to people sometimes, because I state things factually like I'm a genius, because I am, literally. It's been documented. I'm not impressed by things like credentials, like Dr. Fauci. I don't care what his job is or what his title is. The guy's an idiot. So they say, well, who are you to say? But it's a different worldview, how we look at things. But I'm rarely proud of who I am and what I do. People tell me I should be, my accomplishments as a father, as a martial artist, as a professor, but I'm constantly doubting myself. But let's talk about true pride and arrogance. What am I proud of? I'm proud of the fact that my kids are good people, that people come up to me and say, those are the nicest children. I mean, and they're long-haired rock and roll goofs like their father. That's fine with me. And they're quirky, and my boy's autistic like I am. I have six children. But I'm very proud of who they are. I'm not proud of myself for raising them, but I feel pride when people talk to me about my children. Arrogance is a totally different thing. Arrogance is the belief that everything is centered around yourself, that you are superior to people, and that is the antithesis of somebody with an inferiority complex. So I just got that cleared out of there right now. So when I talk about pride and arrogance, when I see pride in the legislature, it's men like Ken Pendergraft, who is okay with the fact that media will beat up on him, that there will be mischaracterizations of him, that people will label him and describe him as being heartless because he didn't support this government program, or being obtuse because he didn't support that government program, that he can look in the mirror and say, I did the best I could, and I'm okay with that. That is taking pride in your work. At the end of the day, to be able to look in the mirror, look yourself in the eye and say, I did the best I could. Arrogance is, how dare you question me? How dare you challenge this? You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea. Oh, you don't have the character that's necessary to be at this level. I'm smarter than you. I'm better than you. I have more money than you. I have more power. I've lived here longer. All these things that are completely inconsequential to who you are as a man, who you are as a human being, who you are as a woman. There is nothing that pride and arrogance have in common, because there is actually an underlying foundation of humility and true pride that I'm okay with who I am and what I did. And arrogance is, I need everybody else to see me as better.
Yeah, I kind of take a more proventary approach. I mean, I agree with what you said, and I know that there's a difference, and the word pride really sticks out at you in that one. But I think I just take it for its meaning. And the examples that I have is there's a lot of times, and we're going to hear the special session and Governor Gordon a lot on this show. And in fact, we may run real long on this and split it into two shows as we're at number two and we're 30 minutes in. So I don't have a problem with that either. I will take pride in doing that extra work. Not a problem. But for me, it's if you're doing something that's worthwhile, legitimate, and you're being fundamentally principled about your efforts and the content of the work you're putting out, then it is okay to be proud of that work and not as much as, you know, the sin arrogant side of what you're saying, of what you pointed out, but of this is work I'm willing to defend. This is work that is worth protecting. And we saw that being violated by the traditional Wyoming Republicans over the special session. If you had legislation that was so important and so well supported, then why wouldn't you defend it? Why would not you have the pride in that work of being able to get that across the line and come back and say, no, we're going to fight for this? And that's what I see when I read number two and look at take pride in your work. And there's tons of examples. But basically, anytime somebody commits themselves to an action and then they back away from it or him and haw, or my least favorite thing, call it a mistake. I like to pin it right on their chest and say, nope, we're in Wyoming. You take pride in your work. That's your work. Be proud of it. You live with that. But it really comes down to, is this an effort that you're willing to come back and defend and protect while, you know, it's going through the process or it's being dealt with, again, like the vetoes from the governor? And that says a lot, not just, you know, all the excuses of why these individuals didn't call the special session. Hey, in my mind, it's a violation of the second code of the West. You were either disingenuous on the front side when you voted for it, or you're disingenuous now in not taking pride in the work that you legitimately put the effort into during the session.
Yeah, you either didn't live your life with courage, or you didn't take pride in your work at that point. And if we just talk about taking pride in your work, yeah. On its surface, my knee-jerk reaction is it just means don't half-ass stuff. If you're going to do it right. But three and four we can take together. Number three is always finish what you start. Number four is do what has to be done. Well, we're right back to the special session. Always finish what you start. They laid it out there. End gun-free zones. Stop this ridiculous notion that people who are undeterred by homicide laws will for some reason go, I'd really like to kill a bunch of people today, but there's that big ugly sign that says no guns. Darn, I'm foiled again. And the other one is do what has to be done. To do something like that, we had to override the veto. And there you go. The Wyoming caucus, knees buckling. Money coming in from whatever donors, whatever assurances they got that it was going to be vetoed. We can't have a special session. Sorry. Going to cost too much money. Let's blow $40 million on this. Let's blow $100 million on that. We could blow the budget by $1 billion.
This might cost $300,000. It's just too expensive.
It was so disingenuous. That was an actual laugh. I'm sorry if you need to cut it out of your show. I understand it, but I do find it laugh out loud funny. I know people put in their stupid emojis with tears squirting and they're rolling on the floor laughing when they're really just mildly amused. But it really is laugh out loud funny when you hear people who are pushing for a much larger budget saying, well, it's really too expensive to cut taxes at this point or to push through the special session. They didn't do what had to be done. They definitely didn't finish what they started. And when you're running these op-eds, it's saying, well, we didn't get the ball across the line this time. Maybe next time you won't be there, so it will get done.
Yeah, and the money thing with the budget is kind of the point that is brought up in my mind is, you know, good on Governor Gordon. He did embody these two. He always finishes what he starts, or at least tried to, because he had that big dream of that big budget, and he did what had to be done to make sure he got it. You know, he made sure that the legislators that were going to tilt a vote one way or the other knew that certain things were going to be coming off the list. I have no doubt of that. I have no evidence of that. But yeah, when he went in with his vetoes and he had his little personal meetings with separate legislators, I've got plenty of evidence to you know, prove that those meetings happen, calling legislators out during the legislative session to come to his office and talk to him. He did what he had to do. He finished what he started. He got that dollar number up there and made sure that at the same time, almost zero real property tax relief was provided to the people. And he took a lot of pride in that work. He went back and embodied number two when he wore that tie and made that stupid Dr. Evil joke about hijacking $1 billion from the people of Wyoming. So the other thing about these is kind of an example of what I just did there is when you use these in a negative way, it doesn't mean just because you do all of this stuff that you're a good person. And that's another piece of the hypocrisy that I want to point out. Well, it's the code of the West. At least he did it. You even point out Governor Gordon follows the code of the West. Yeah, to do some pretty evil crap. It doesn't make you good at all, but at least he sticks to some of the wording of the standards here. And definitely, I love that fake Dr. Evil laugh he did when he was pointing at his tie and joking about robbing the people of $1 billion at the end of the session.
Did he even hold his pinky up to his chin as he did it? I didn't see it.
He absolutely did. I have a video of it on the Facebook page. You can go check it out anytime. That pinky is up. He's pointing at the tie, and he's taking a whole lot of pride in that work.
This is what I'll say about Governor Mark Gordon. And I'm not going to impugn the man because his politics are different from mine. I know many people's politics are different than mine. It's the life of a libertarian. I piss off liberals and conservatives on a daily basis. I don't know him personally. I have met him in person and had conversations with him and spent time sitting next to him and his wife, who's a wonderful woman, at dinners. And he's a very intelligent man. He's a very friendly man. He's very well spoken. And he's a very effective politician. So I really don't like when people start just like talking about like, Gordon, he's just a piece of whatever. He has his principles. He stands by them. So I'd actually agree with you that I know about Mark Gordon. He largely stands by the code of the West that, except when we get to number six, but, let's go on to number five and then we'll come back to that one. I like this one a lot, but it is very vague. Be tough, but be fair. And again, you're not tough or fair when you say we better not have a special session because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. It's not fair to the voters. It's not fair to all the legislators who fought so hard to pass this legislation that one man stopped. And it's definitely not tough to say, Well,
some people have prior commitments, so it's kind of rough to make them like give up their parties and vacations or whatever. We've talked about that before. If you don't have the time to sacrifice to represent and serve the people of Wyoming, then don't do it. Don't put your name up for office. If you're thinking, well, it's a part-time job and I get some extra money and I could tell everybody I'm a senator and all these wonderful things, and wait, you're going to call me back for a special session? Well, I already have reservations often. That's not very tough. Being tough is doing, again, what needs to be done when it needs to be done. It's really actually number five is kind of superfluous because if you follow the other tenets of the Code of the West, you will be tough and fair. Because you will be living your day with courage. You will be doing what needs to be done. You'll be fair. Because we get to number six that says, when you make a promise, keep it. When you say you're going to sign a bill to end gun-free zones, you sign that bill rather than veto it.
Exactly. No excuse. Call it hypocrisy. Call it whatever you want. I saw the veto message and all of the wringing of the hands and the fear and the concern. And it doesn't matter. You're a freaking liar. You're a hypocrite. And I have heard what you just said about the governor and being a good guy. We had a long talk this morning on the morning show about how being a good guy doesn't matter. Or maybe it was on my show. But being a good guy is great, but it doesn't mean anything. Albert Summers just came out in an article stating that the guy that went and tortured the wolf in Daniel, Wyoming is a guy he's known his whole life. And he's a really good guy. Yeah, but he still did this.
No, he's not.
Okay. So I don't care if people want to call Gordon a piece of crap or not. And I'm not sitting here doing it just to say I don't like the guy and he has no value. I'm saying on issues that are important to me when it comes to a governor, a representative, the chief executive of my state, this guy is a hypocrite. This guy is a liar. This guy is playing a game. And it's based on when you make a promise, keep it. That 2018, the survey he filled out when he checked and he said, I'm 100% Second Amendment good. I will sign legislation, specifically stated, I will sign legislation to abolish gun-free zones if it comes across my desk. Hey, it just happened to come up and, you know, you got caught and you didn't do what had to be done and you weren't living that day with courage. So it's a big problem for me and it should be a big problem for a lot of people. Not just because of what Mark Gordon did, but because of what that represents and the people that are associated with him who are still running other parts of our government.
And I'm definitely somebody who lives by that. When you make a promise, keep it. But I take it one step further. I don't make promises. I just say whether I will do something or I will not do something. And people who know me know if I say I'm going to do something, then it happens. And if there's some reason that I literally cannot do it, there will be an explanation for it in those, in some terms that don't sound like an excuse. So I never say to anyone, I promise to. I just say I will, because I've got that track record and that character, which I think aligns pretty well with the code of the West, that when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. When I say I'm going to try to do something, I try to do it. When I say I can't do something, I can't. When I say I don't want to do something, but I could, I say I don't want to do it. It's a matter of being honest, and it's a matter of having that type of character. Now, when we talk about different politicians, about being a good guy or whatever, I believe to my core that there are men and women who disagree with me diametrically on many issues, who are ultimately awesome people to their core. I get a little bit tired of the tribalism that you're like, you're either a good conservative or you're a worthless, spineless, satanic rhino, or the other side of it. You know, you're either a good progressive or you're a Nazi. I just don't like that bifurcation, that dichotomy. You're on our side, you're a horrible person. It is not hard for me to meet a man like Mark Gordon or meet a man like Cyrus Western and not agree with them politically and still say, I like this person. I genuinely like Cyrus Western. And I know people like to beat him, call him frat boy or whatever. I've talked with him. I've hung out with him. I've literally had a beer with Cyrus Western. He's a good dude. I like him. Maybe he doesn't like me. Maybe he's like, Tom's a douche and I'm nice to him because I want him to say nice things about me. Whatever. I'm easily manipulated like that because I work on face value and I assume other people are doing that too. I'd imagine if I ever met Carly Provenza and talked to her, I'd probably get along with her quite well because she is a distinctly principled woman. And I think she's wrong on almost everything. And she would likewise say the same thing about me. But that is someplace I'd like to get back. And I think it is right in line with the code of the West that we can have honest disagreements about how we see the world and still have respect for one another and still treat each other like human beings. But you're not doing that if you're not keeping your promises, if you're living your days in cowardice or fear. If you're working arrogantly for yourself instead of taking pride of the fact that you stand up for other people, if you're giving up on stuff when it becomes difficult, it's a cliche. Anything worthwhile in life takes a lot of effort. So we need to do that. But now we're going to get deeper into some of these. And maybe this is probably when you might want to cut this into two shows, because this one is huge. Number 7. Ride for the brand. What does that mean? Because that is so generic. It's ride for the brand. Now, you could look at the historical context. Is the whole idea, we're not talking about a brand, you know, like Campbell's soup or Coca-Cola. we're talking about a literal brand on cattle is where that originally comes from. You ride for the brand, literally ride a horse as a cowboy for the brand. And my understanding always was, and I was familiar with this term back when I lived in the foreign country of the People's Republic of Illinois, spit it out, Tom, that ride for the brand meant you behave as if the people you're representing, as if you're representing yourself at that point. That you are a representative of whatever brand, whatever organization you're standing for. When you say, I am a part of this organization as a representative, that I will behave as if I am upholding the values and the traditions, as if I revere the foundations of that organization. It doesn't mean that we redefine the brand to fit whatever I feel like at this point. That writing for the brand now means more spending. Now it means more government programs. It means more federal funding. Writing for the brand of the Wyoming Party, for the conservative Wyoming Conservative Party, means the whole idea of limited government, of faith first in your God, in your family, in your country, and government becomes beneath all of that at that point. So when I look at ride for the brand, I always thought it meant that whoever you say you are, act like it. Don't act any way you wish and then claim that you are acting on behalf of the brand. Somehow extrapolate things or pervert things to the point where your twisted ideology is the new meaning of the brand. Okay, I know you're dying to weigh in on this because I see you rocking back and forth.
Oh, I just have a comfortable chair that happens to rock, but I would agree that not only is it about representation of the group that you're associating yourself with, there's a great line in a movie, take a man's money, I ride for the brand. And later in the same movie, when he's challenging one of the other horse hands, he says, are you riding for the brand? Are you running scared? Because there's a lot of loyalty that is self-inflicted in that situation, the riding for the brand. I've chosen to take this job as a hand for your ranch. I am working for you. I am protecting your brand, your investment, your land, your cattle, the image of your company, your, you know, presence. I am a representative, just like you said, of that. And it's based on a lot of duty and a lot of integrity. And it means I'm not going to bamboozle you or work against your interest or try to hornswoggle you out of what you got on behalf of another rancher, landowner, whatever. And the way that applies in the political parties is we have our principles. We have a platform. And what we say is when you take actions, we expect you to take actions that support these ideals. The funny thing is, it's not mandatory. You don't have to be a Republican. You don't have to follow the platform. Just be honest about it. The thing you described of, well, I just want to go out and represent myself. We have a word for that in the political parties too. It's called being an independent. And I really think that if a lot of these professional, semi-professional politicians who can't seem to get the standard and the principle of being a conservative down, even though it's written on paper and there's only 23 requirements in Wyoming for that, they can't get it down. And they're such good legislators and they're so well respected, they'd have no problem getting elected as an independent if any of that were true. But I don't think it's true. The problem we have riding for the brand is the truth is that that R carries a lot of weight in the minds of the people. I wish the principles behind the R would carry more. But there's another interesting fact. And this takes me back to the Frontier Republicans, the elitist establishment who said, we took over their party, we changed their party. You know, the fundamental principles of the Republican Party and conservatism haven't changed much in at least the last 40, 50 years. You know, Goldwater kind of established that conscious of the conservative, if you will. I wrote a book about it. I think it's called The Conscious of the Conservative. But the thing is, they can be changed. We have a process for that. We're about to have a state convention where we're going to address the state party platform. And through a majority vote and debate of the elected delegates of the party, yeah, those platform planks, they can be changed. But the question I always ask, especially with the emergence of the Frontier Republicans is, if you want your party back, as you say, what fundamentally changed in the principles from the time you say you were running it and now that actual conservatives are doing the work and running it themselves? And what would you change about the platform to make it more palatable to you? Because it sounds like you've just been saying you believe this stuff for generations on end, never having actually believed it or practiced it. And now that the grassroots have stood up, you're so worried about losing your R because you never had the principles to lose in the first place. You want to change the fundamental posture of the party. And at that point, it's always easier just to go to the Secretary of State's office, pick up a form and start your own provisional political party. It's easier to start one than it is to burn one to the ground, devalue any equity you have in that, and then try to take it over. What would be the point of that? And I can never get a straight answer. I just don't understand because I haven't been Wyoming Republican long enough to know what it was like. Well, what it was like was a falsehood. You guys never practiced the principles. So when it comes down to when I hear and I say ride for the brand, I'm pointing to the platform and I'm saying with honesty and integrity, you believe in those things or you're at least willing to read the list and point out the things you don't agree with. I have issues with some portions of the Republican Party platform and I'm willing to have that conversation on any of the ones I have issues with, but they don't. So the real question is, if you want to change the foundations of the brand that much, are you really a Republican? Or are you just nostalgic and in love with the title? I don't think they ride for the brand. I think they ride for the title. Well, my grandfather was a Republican for, you know, his whole life and my daddy, and we loved Ronald Reagan and blah, blah. That's not a political ideology. That's nostalgia. And they need to kind of get over that crap and say, hey, I'm either going to believe in the principles or I'm going to go ahead and start my own party and develop my own brand, as opposed to what I call brand rustling, going out and trying to steal the one you thought you were entitled to in the first place, but never respected or rode for at all.
Yeah, and we could talk about that from the specific terms of riding for the brand in Wyoming. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the general meaning of it and then bring it into Wyoming politics. That I look at and I see people who claim to be a Republican, and it's clear that they went that route because they wanted to be in political power. If they ran for office in Cook County, Illinois, they would bring the same set of principles forth and they would register as Democrats because that's how you win in Cook County, Illinois. You have to be a Democrat. If you want to win in Chicago, you have to be a Democrat. So even conservatives register as Democrats who want power at that point. Right there, that is a complete violation of the code of the West because you're just not being honest. This is not pride. It's arrogance. It's not courage to go forth with who you really are. It's cowardice to hide behind something. And it's all because you want that power. You want to be in control at that point. And I'm not somebody who finds myself typically on the side of the Freedom Caucus because I'm this right-wing Nazi who wants to change the state of Wyoming to right-wing Nazism. I am a long-haired, Harley-biking libertarian who sees one side as preserving my right and my ability to ride my Harley around with a big gun on my hip and pay low taxes versus the other side that says it's okay to increase the spending, your taxes, because it's for a good reason. It's like, well, I've heard all this before, but I could even take this outside politics. As a martial arts instructor, and this might, the pop culture of people might understand this type of thing. We teach from a perspective, and our tenets are courtesy, humility, integrity, perseverance, self-control, and indomitable spirit. Now, somebody might want to teach within our school. Somebody might want to move up the ranks and become a master, own their own school, have influence in the federation in which I teach at that point, who may not believe in those principles, but then pretend like they do because they would like the power, they would like the income, they would like what the prestige, whatever it is at that point. And they come from Cobra Kai. I know, fictional, but whatever. Strike first, strike hard, no mercy. Those are their principles. But then they pretend to have our principles of courtesy and humility because they want to work their way up the ladder. That's exactly what I see in the state of Wyoming right now, where you have people running as Republicans who are not pro-life, who are not pro-Second Amendment, who are not for small government, who are not for local control, and they feign it every instance where they can do it, such as when we stand up for a constitutional right like the Second Amendment, now they're for local control at that point. But they're not for local control when it comes to something like state standards for education. Or they're not for local or parental control when it comes to something like funding education, because they might spend it on a school that I don't agree with and I know better than you because of my arrogance. So writing for the brand in Wyoming, it is an issue for this year. And we see the Wyoming caucus back on their heels to the point where they even funded their own joke of a rating website, the YCAP, which I made fun of back when I was doing Wyoming is Right, and we made fun of on the Independence Network, that we have Democratic leader Carly Provenza rated as more conservative than John Bear and Ken Pendergraft and Mark Jennings. I mean, the Freedom Caucus came out as being some of the least conservative people in the state, because what they did was bastardize the definition of conservatism to fit their liberal policies. They're running with ads that say, I'm conservative. But what we'll do is, so I can be honest about that, is we'll just redefine what conservative means. And I've mentioned this before, Joey, it really sticks in my craw, and it comes down to the suicide hotline. And I heard David talk about it, David Iverson, when he talked about the trope of, well, if it saves one life, it's worth doing. Well, but, you know, then make the speed limit 5 miles an hour, because that would save at least one life. But the principle of being pro-life, it's very cut and dry. We don't suck the brains out of a baby while it's kicking its feet for its own survival. That's what the pro-life movement is. The pro-life movement is when a human being who has lived his whole life and honored his family and honored God and worked for his country, when he can no longer make decisions for himself, we decide that he's lived long enough. Let's put him out of his suffering like a sick dog. Pro-life is protecting human life, the dignity of it, from conception till natural death. That's what the pro-life movement is. So what do we do if we're not truly pro-life, we're not truly conservative? We bastardize the definition of pro-life into pro-life is now willingness to tax more and spend more money on programs that might save a life. And that's where the suicide hotline comes in. They've bastardized what it means to be pro-life to say, I'm pro-life because I want to put people's mental health care and their well-being and their very lives in the hands of a government-funded program, which, you know, I am diametrically opposed to that. I've mentioned this before, and people say, how could you? I had a friend who committed suicide. I've said it before. I've spent my life working with suicidal people, strangers and friends, and strangers who have become friends because of it, that it is so near and dear to me that people value their own God-given lives and realize what they are worth, that I don't want in the hands of the government. So I can't take this. This is really, really sticks in my craw, as you can tell, as we say, well, pro-life now is giving over our responsibilities as human beings, as Christians, to the government. That is not pro-life. Because when it comes right down to it, the government will make decisions based on the budget. And the budget is always too small. It's always underfunded. And there's always some reason why the government is falling short and your taxes needs to be raised higher. Oh, and you're just a selfish human being who doesn't ride for the brand if you don't want to give your money and liberty over to the government. Riding for the brand in Wyoming means individualism. It means local control. It means true conservative government, that government is a necessary evil, because human beings are flawed creations. It is not our go-to for everything. You are not riding for the brand if you think we have a problem with suicide, the state must do something. We have a problem with healthcare, the state must do something. We have a problem with climate change, the smallest state in the country must do something.
Yeah, it's always the standard of the redcoats. If there's a problem, government is here to solve it. And if there's not a problem, government is here to create a solution to make sure that there is a problem. But it's interesting what you said about being pro-life. And this goes back to what I said about the platform in this writing for the brand, is that I personally have some issues with the way standards and principles are worded in the Republican Party platform. And I'll tell you, pro-life is one of them, because it says from conception to natural death. Well, there's a whole lot of things in there, if you step back and look at the other principles of conservatism, that, you know, can be toyed with. And the suicide hotline ends up being one of them. And I have proposed an amendment to the platform for this year, because I think we need to better define or stick with the definition and let me know I'm wrong, because I'm not pro-life. I'm pro-innocent life and liberty. And in that, it would be endowed with the right to life from the moment of conception until natural death, or, you know, you lawfully take a life with your rights, defending your property, your family, yourself, or fully adjudicated through proper due process execution with the death sentence. Because these are other things we believe, but even our principles don't include that and leave all this wiggle room. So I wouldn't say I'm pro-choice. I'm anti-abortion for sure. But I think we need to more clearly define some of these principles that are on our brand. Not that they're bad now, but they could be a lot better, to reduce the amount of wiggle room some of these goofballs think they can get away with when they're toying with their positions. And I think the real point here is, if you have to monkey around with the, well, technically, portion of a fundamental principle in order to get your bill passed or your legitimacy recognized, then you're missing the whole point of having a principle in the first place. But I'm also a procedure guy, so I think we need to more clearly define that one and say, no, let's cut out all the crap. This is what we're talking about.
You know, and that should be a good discussion too, because for those of you out there who think that Joey and I just sit here and compare notes and tend to agree on everything, we'd have some disagreement on something like this, what it means to be pro-life or what a natural death is. Like for one, okay, somebody tries to rape my daughter, it's only natural, I'm going to shoot him in the head. So that's a natural death as far as I'm concerned. But I'm somebody who, on the other hand, I'm opposed to capital punishment. And I know one of the we can get into this a little bit. This is what it is. Do some people deserve to die? Absolutely. The whole thing they just said, well, you said your daughter. What if it was your daughter? It's like, right. I get it. I understand it. There are some people who have no right to take another breath on this planet. There's no reason any of us should support another meal for that person. They should waste another breath of oxygen. I understand that completely. But I also know that there have been enough people exonerated by DNA evidence and by bad prosecutors and by the fact that I am somebody in general who doesn't trust people in power and authority to use their authority with righteousness at all times, that if one innocent man is executed, it is worth it to me. This is a case where I actually say, if it saves one life, because I don't like the idea that if somebody's exonerated posthumously, all we could say is, oops, here, family, have some money. But there have been people on death row who've been let go. That's where I can't stomach the death penalty. The fact that I can't imagine the horror of being an innocent man being marched off to a lethal injection, knowing you did nothing wrong. And of course, this is my liberal bleeding heart here. I know America's got a horrific history with racism too, and prosecution too, where there were black people who were sent to death row, completely railroaded in the courtroom. So anyway, I get it. I understand some people deserve to die. I am somebody who could probably administer such justice in the correct circumstances, but I'm just somebody, I'd rather they just spend the rest of their existence. I'm happy paying for these people to be locked up in a room by themselves for the rest of their lives to never get out, for the fact that if I could save the life of one innocent person. So there we go. There's the bleeding heart side of Dr. Tom Kelly.
Well, thanks for showing that, Tom. I'm hearing what you're saying. I'm not necessarily in disagreement. I live in the world of reality. I know that there have been a lot of cases that have been overturned. The Barry Scheck has this whole group. What is it? The Innocence Project. And yeah, I get that that happened. But what I heard was you're saying you have concerns about the process, which I also have. But I have no concern about the concept of having a death penalty. Now, there's another argument there. Well, how do you get there? This flawed process. I get it. I'm not going to have that argument tonight. But the concept of the death penalty and how lives are taken, it's not just my belief. Right now, I'm under the impression that the majority of the Republican Party believes in supporting the death penalty, and we live in a state that has it. So based on the situation in front of us, and this is why I want to have the debate, this is why I want to have the conversation, do we clarify this language? Because it gets people talking. We're talking about it right now to get people thinking. And you can't just say, well, that's the law in my state. No, that's one of the components to it. Where do you stand? Because laws can be changed, just like the platform can be changed. And I think the concept of having a death penalty, regardless of the flaws in the process, which definitely need to be addressed, is something that I believe in. And I believe most of the Republicans have supported for years, because anytime a challenge to the death penalty or repealing the law allowing the death penalty in Wyoming's come up, it's been dismissed. So again, not going to fight that one to death, but the bottom line is the intent of the principle is what's important. And I think we need to tighten some of those up so we can further hold people accountable when they don't ride for the brand, not just in our opinion, but as they said they would when they asked us to support them in being our representative.
Yeah, and the death penalty is not in the platform anyway, so that's really not riding for the brand. We could obviously have honest disagreements about what to do with capital punishment and still call ourselves members of the Republican Party, because that's not a fundamental principle of the Republican Party. We were talking about being pro-life, but you're right. At the convention, we should definitely delineate what it means to be pro-life, because otherwise we're going to get sucked in this whole thing. It's not just going to be suicide prevention. The next thing is going to be the right to health care. Complete government takeover of the healthcare system, because that's pro-life. When everyone has health care, the infant mortality rate drops. It's just the right thing to do. If you really care about people, if you're really a Christian, you'll give over power of medicine to people like Joe Biden and Anthony Fauci. What a horrific idea. But yeah, I think we got the whole idea down of riding for the brand. We have the tenets of the party. And if you don't support them, you should not represent the party. It's that simple. I should not be a representative of my school of martial arts if I believe it is important to be rude and arrogant and deceitful and cowardly. Those are not the precepts or the tenets of my martial art. And I can't pretend like, well, it really is courageous to run away and let your woman get raped because, you know, when you were going to get help at that point, and there was probably a champ, you would have gotten raped yourself too if you had stepped in. That's cowardice. And I wouldn't want to present it as being courage at that point. So I don't like the fact that we have people in Wyoming who again, use the word bastardize what the planks of the platform are, or not pride, again, arrogance, decide that they know better. They don't like the fact that they are outvoted at the convention by the 2/3 majority of Republicans in the state. And they decide that, well, we'll just ignore that platform. That's just right-wing nonsense anyway. I'm the true Republican, even though I only represent 20, 30, 0% of the platform. So we'll have a lot of fun in upcoming days, because you'll be down at the convention, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I have many tasks and duties at the convention, the best of which, of course, being as a delegate to the state convention. So Saturday, April 20th, we'll have it out on the floor. And I'm hoping that we actually get to the business of the platform and bylaws and not all this arguing over who gets seated and who doesn't. But we'll have to wait and see.
If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool.
Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake. Oh no, the forecast said that they're